The flowers in this room and elsewhere in the building this morning were left through the kindness of George and Elizabeth Charlson, for whose daughter, Stacy, a memorial service was held here yesterday. Earlier yesterday, in the morning hours, about 20 of us had a marvelous time doing some very necessary work in and around the church. I'm going to name the good people who came because I think they deserve the recognition. Ruth and Tom Llewellyn, Pat Thomas, Jim Winter, Jean Farbach, who was the first one here about 7 or before in the morning, Joel Taylor, John Carraway, Jerry and Noel Harney, Carol Reel, Bev Becker, Diane Park, Joanne Potorf, Alan Jones, Keith and Frieda Russell, Dorothea Sloan, Bruce and Jackie Beeler, Michael Bates, and a woman whose last name I didn't get, Billy something. We did too many things to mention, and the church now means a little more to us than ever. Thank you for that great morning, and if we have another one in a year, I would love to have some of the young couples who have joined this church in the last year or so to come out and experience that exquisite pleasure. It's really fun. And by the way, although I hadn't intended to say this, if you haven't read the story about the Mennonite school board member in Halstead, don't miss that. I suppose enough of you have read it, obviously, so that I can tell you that when this gentleman, who I'm sure is a very fine person, I have enormous admiration for Mennonite people, but his religious convictions, he was quite conservative, and he felt that he could not serve on a board or make a vote where women might be in a position of authority. And I was reading this to Billy this morning, and I got to the part where one woman said, "If my husband said anything like that, I'd just knock him up alongside the head." And I was very uneasy by the way she appreciated that comment. I saw a movie a year or so ago called The Doctor, starring William Hurt as a cynical, successful heart surgeon whose life is turned around by his own bout with cancer. All of us secretly hope that our own personal physician knows how it really feels to face the dark mysteries of cancer, to have a heart attack, to know the depression and helpless feeling of a long illness. So I sensed more than the usual degree of involvement by the audience that evening. I even overheard one woman say to her husband as they left, "I hope my doctor sees this movie," but I mention it for quite another reason. When this doctor comes home unexpectedly in the middle of the day to be with his family because they have suddenly become extremely important to him, his wife calls to their young son who is playing outside. "Come in," she says, "and say hello to your father." The boy races into the room without even noticing his dad standing there and automatically picks up the telephone. "Hi, Dad." "Hello? Hello?" And then turning to his mother, he says, "Well, Mom, we must have gotten cut off." It said all that needed to be said about how that beautiful house had failed to be much of a home. We've all been thinking a lot about homes lately. the ones that get riddled with bullets in drive-by shootings, and the ones from which the kids come who do the shootings. We wring our hands and write letters to the editor saying something has to be done about kids without a conscience who grew up in houses without knowing what a home is. It's a little worse than we think, actually, because we don't hear about what are now only minor disruptions of neighborhood life. The one that came closest to my own home, for example, because in the larger scheme, it wasn't that important. I live on a wide tree-lined street named Fairway near the Rolling Hills Golf Course, far from where I ever dreamed of being in danger. But late one night, somebody drove past and shot into a house across the street, at random, it would seem, just for the reckless joy of firing a gun. We thought a car had backfired as it passed our bedroom window, but the next morning, an elderly neighbor showed us how narrowly she had missed being killed, showed us the splintering path of a large bullet through her upper-level balcony screen door, across her bedroom, through a closet, and into a bathroom she had just walked out of a moment before the bullet blew the cover off the bathroom switch plate and ricocheted around chipping tile until it finally wore itself out. This would have been a news story when I was a kid, but since no one was wounded and no one was caught, it didn't even appear in the paper. But my neighbor will never turn out her bedroom light again at night with quite the same sense of security she once had. I feel somewhat apologetic to talk about things you hear so much about, but a news item a few days ago gave me a fresh jolt when I thought I was almost beyond being surprised. I'm sure you saw it. Down in Georgia, sweet, slow, southern Georgia, 7 little sixth grade kids were sentenced to 48 hours of community service and put on indefinite probation for trying to poison their teacher's iced tea and to trip her as she walked downstairs. They weren't quite good enough yet at such things to bring it off, and they bungled several attacks on their teacher, but they kept on trying to outdo one another until somebody brought a handgun and a knife to help out. The juvenile court judge called it a terrible situation and said, shaking his head in bewilderment, "This is a symptom of what's going on in America." There was a time not so long ago when I would have thought, "Keep calm, Judge. You may be overreacting. After all, this is still a rare and isolated little horror story. But I live in Wichita, and it's getting harder to make myself believe that." Do you know why the kids wanted to put chemicals in the tea and trip the woman? They said she was too strict. Too strict. How do you like that as a rationale for physical assault, perhaps even murder? The woman had been a teacher for 27 years. My guess is that she was trying to keep the same kind of order she had always had in her classroom through all those years until she came into the 90s when order and discipline are tougher to manage than they once were. I don't want to be hysterical either, but times really have changed a little since I was in public school. I can't remember truthfully whether I ever told you this or it's something I have written in an autobiography and have forgotten about, but I was far from angelic as a, I hear faint chuckles that indicate, as a child, but my one great act of defiance came in an art class in high school one day when the teacher told my best friend and me to report to the principal's office for talking too much. She didn't know I was preparing to be a preacher and a professor. It would never have occurred to me to question her command until my all-state 200-pound tackle buddy stopped about halfway out of the room and said, "I'm not going." Now, you talk about peer pressure. I was a 165-pound second-string halfback. What could I do but say with impeccable grammar, "Me neither"? So we sat back down in our splendid rebellion until the principal arrived, a short little man who looked surprisingly like a balding monkey, but who had absolutely no worry at all about handling the two of us. "You boys are guilty of rank insubordination," he said, expecting us to know what the word meant, and kicked us out of school for the rest of the day. We could return if our parents wrote a note saying we had reported the rebellion and had promised them not to do it again. Now, can you imagine a time when being charged with rank insubordination could shake up a couple of cocky high school juniors who had no knives or guns or even the remotest thought of attacking either the teacher or the principal? So why are things so different? There is no single answer, but I belong to the group that blames a breakdown in family discipline and further blames the disrespect and back talk that are the stuff of comedy on so many shows, on TV, and in the movies. Whenever I have glanced at those family sitcoms, the kids always seem to be sassing their parents and teachers, using openly the verbal crudities we tried out behind the barn but were afraid to let slip in public, and in general making fun of just how inept and stupid adults are and how easily they can be outwitted. It makes our scripture reading this morning seem quaint. "Children, respect your father and mother so that all may go well with you. Parents, bring up your children with discipline." There are plenty of broken and bungled homes to blame for this, and far too much economic despair. But just at this moment, I have television on my mind. I have never thought for a single moment that The View was right, that is advanced so adamantly by TV and movie producers, that they only reflect culture, that this is how the world is after all, and who can blame them for simply copying life? That has never been the whole truth. Art forms do reflect culture, but they also create it by forever pushing the boundaries of what is acceptable, by glamorizing vulgarity and violence. They create in young minds, even in older minds, the sense that these things must be fashionable, all right. And if you doubt that, you might try running a little test. Ask yourself, what things you now tolerate and what language you now use on occasion that 20 years ago you would have thought had no place at all in your life. I confess to having been influenced. I use some phrases on occasion I would not have used 20 years ago. I've been one of those college professors who came to believe that few human beings have been wiser than Plato about social intercourse And he said, in essence, that whoever provides the art and entertainment for a culture will shape what that culture becomes. And if he had it right 25 centuries ago, can you imagine his shock if he could spend a week with MTV, movies, and much of primetime television? If you bother to read about such things, you know that a few days ago, the TV and movie producers finally caved in and admitted what anyone with sense enough to be down out of the trees knew years ago, that yes, TV and movie glorification of crude behavior, quick and easy sex without commitment or consequence, and murderous violence actually does influence an alarming number of people to copy what they see. So what would the entertainment masters do with this belated revelation? Cut down on at least the worst of such programs? No. They would follow the lead, reluctantly, of the cigarette industry when it was finally forced to make a small strategic retreat. They would put little warnings on the screen and in the TV guides that this program may contain scenes of violence unacceptable to some. Parental discretion is advised. So not to worry. The problem is solved. That is, if you can believe the most cynical joke to come down the pike in the last 50 years, and if you can believe that there is enough parental discretion in general use about who watches what to make any difference. Somewhere in my lifetime, a goodly number of parents abdicated their role and hoped the school or the church would turn their children into responsible adults. It doesn't work. Not when what was meant to be a home is often a dormitory attached to a garage. Part of the problem is that our parents could have on one income what we can only have on two. So when mom and dad pick up the kids at the daycare center and have them for what is left of the day, it's terribly hard to demand discipline of a child you may secretly fear doesn't love you quite enough, having seen so little of you. Something has led parents, and I have a shaky feeling right now because you may not agree with this, but something has led parents into begging children to behave, begging them to behave, a posture of weakness and indecision that any kid worth her salt picks up on immediately and exploits to the maximum. I hear it in grocery stores, in homes, at church, over and over. Johnny, don't twist the mic off the pulpit stand. Okay, okay. Susie, you shouldn't tear open the cookie box we're not going to buy. Okay, okay. I tried a time or two this week to imagine my dad asking me in that tone if it was okay to do what he told me, but I didn't get anywhere. I've often been impressed by the advice of a child psychologist named John Rosemond, who says, one of the things parenthood has taught me is that you don't necessarily do children any favors by trying to make them happy. Parenthood is not a popularity contest. And I'll tell you, I think from what I see, and I see a great many parents in action, that may be the most memorable sentence I've read in recent years. Parenthood is not a popularity contest. You have to love your children enough to be willing to forfeit, for their sake, at least temporarily, popularity. So what you say, kindly but firmly, is, Johnny, twisting the mic is something we do not do. And if Johnny doesn't get it, you take him home and figure out an appropriate way of helping him remember. I don't propose to say what it is. You say, Susie, when you open the cookies on the Dillon shelf, we have to buy them. So I'll buy these, but this is not acceptable behavior, so we'll do without cookies for the next 2 weeks. Johnny and Susie may then say, they hate you. You reply cheerfully that you love them. And if you really do, and you show it often, the discipline you insist on will not endanger your relationship. I asked the kid, who was pretty vague about religion, it didn't seem to be the thing that kept him going. I wanted to know. I said, what keeps you at your best when peer pressure is strong to do harm to yourself or to somebody else? And he said a surprising thing. He said he had a family back of him that he did not want to let down, and that he also felt there were many others back of his family whom they had not wanted to let down, a kind of endless conspiracy that made a difference when he had to make a decision. Somebody made a home for him, and somebody has to make one for every child, or the homeless child, sooner or later, will make somebody pay. And homeless children, I remind you, can be in Eastboro and Tallgrass as easily as they are in welfare housing and blighted neighborhoods, because homeless for a child is a place where love is not demanding but weak, where parents wheedle and coax, threaten what they never intend to fulfill, beg for obedience, without realizing there are times when it is better for a child to respect you than to like you. Tough love wears you out, but tough love makes a home. Anyone with a down payment can have a house.